You clock out. We clock in. Welcome to the Torn by Sports Lunch Break.
Welcome to this edition of the Torn by Sports Lunch Break. Joining me today is Brian Sweeney of Scout.com covering the Utah Utes. How are you doing today, Brian?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I could do for some sunshine, but I'll have to settle for cloud cover for the time being.
It's a cold one today, so we'll survive, though.
Yeah, no, it's just the beginning of a full winter of them. So. Yeah,
exactly.
It's been interesting watching the Ute environment, especially on social media, and a lot of focus is on the Utah offense this year. So, I'm giving you the goal today of solving all the Utah offensive problems. So, buckle down. Here we go. First of all, I was just wanting to get an opinion from you about how the season in general is going, and how would you grade out the season in the Utes overall and in the different aspects of the game?
Well, I'd say obviously it's 7-1, and being ranked 12th in the country this season has exceeded expectations for most people. And kind of the pinnacle was that big win over Oregon. Nobody really saw that coming. I think most people expected, even though they thought Oregon would take a little step back, nobody really expected Utah to go in there and not only win, but beat them in the manner that they did. So they've been consistent week to week, and it's really been Utah football to a T. I mean, they're playing tough defense. They got a great line. They've got good linebackers. They're not giving up a ton of big plays. The offense is conservative, and that's how Kyle Whittingham does it. So it's been a typical Utah season in terms of what we expected, but with a little bit more beyond that. The big win over Oregon obviously stands out. Beating Michigan looks great at this point. As Michigan, in my opinion, despite two losses, I think Michigan might be one of the top five teams in the entire country. And Utah got them. I think it was a good thing that Utah got them week one, because Michigan has really taken off after that, and it just goes to show you how good Jim Harbaugh is. I'd love to see those two teams play again, and maybe we'll get to see them in the Rose Bowl later this year to see we get a little rematch there. But it's definitely been a good season. You'd like to see more out of the offense, and I think Utah has the personnel to be more diverse offensively. We saw what they were able to do when they had a little bit of confidence against Oregon and really opened things up. They were successful, and the big reason for that is because they had early success in the game. Travis Wilson was able to throw the ball, run the ball. Devontae Booker can run the ball. So when they were able to execute well in just their base packages and what they were doing offensively, they had the confidence to open things up. And I kind of wish that Aaron Roderick and Jim Harding and Kyle Whittingham would show that confidence on a week-to-week basis offensively. So and really let the offense do their thing, because when given the opportunity, Utah is generally executing well. They're just not given a lot of opportunities on the offensive side of the ball. The fear of the turnovers, as we saw against USC, yeah, that can bite you. But sometimes you really got to open things up, because there's going to be a week or two where Utah really struggles to move the ball consistently, and they're really going to have to get creative in what they do. But as a whole so far, the Ute fans have to be loving what this is so far. Utah at 7-1 is still in a good spot to make a run at not only the conference championship, but to get in the college football playoff. If they win out and they can knock off Stanford, and they've really got to hope it's Stanford coming out of the North, and I really don't see anyone else really challenging them. Maybe Oregon can make a comeback and get there. But if it's 11-1 Stanford versus 11-1 Utah in that Pac-12 championship game and Utah wins, looking at the schedule to what's going to happen in the Big 12 and how they're probably just going to cannibalize themselves in the SEC, who knows what's going to happen there. Utah's going to have a great shot if they get to 12-1 to get in that playoff. And I would guess that they probably would be able to sneak in. And they're probably going to be favored in most of their games the rest of the way. I mean, Washington's pretty much a toss-up this weekend, but UCLA is very inconsistent, and Utah really shouldn't have much of a problem with Arizona or Colorado. So things have been great so far, and they set up well to finish the season. And I don't see any reason why this team can't continue to do what they're doing and win the South.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, they're in position. They're one game up. It's all up on the Utes to, follow through, to execute, like you mentioned. I mean, the interesting thing something that's been interesting to me on the side of the offense is, last week, Whittingham postgame said they should have passed it more. The week before that against USC, they should have ran it more. What's going on with the play calling and that side of things that they just can't seem to get to where they're happy with it.
Well, that's just, that's a big indictment, and that's something that I've pointed out after this game, and I didn't really have an issue with them not running it enough against USC. I mean, you have one game where you recognize, all right, maybe we should have done this more, but back-to-back week to say, yeah, we probably should have done this, and the next week, well, we should have done that. If Utah can't, if they're able to make those, recognize that by the time the game ends, that means they're able to recognize those same things in game. And I just wonder what the approach is. If Whittingham's hamstringing Roderick and his play calling there, or if it's Roderick by design and he's the one that's just going a lot slower. So I'm kind of curious as to what that dynamic is when they're up in a game, or maybe even when they're down in a game, as to how much Utah is willing to deviate from their game plan. We see these great adjustments defensively that Utah makes. They make great in-game adjustments defensively, but offensively, in Kyle Whittingham's tenure, that's never really been the thing. They kind of stick to the game plan and what they're going to do and don't deviate from it a bunch. But if they're able to in-game recognize their deficiencies, we should have done this, we should have done that, why can't they apply that during the game? And that's really a concerning thing to me, because if they get down in a game, like if there's a game, and let's take this week against Washington. Washington's going to stop them quite a few times. Washington's defense is tremendous. Utah's going to have to make some offensive adjustments during the game and try to find those holes. All right, here's what's working, here's what's not. Let's go to what's working, and then maybe let's try to mix things up here and there a little bit, and let's get a little tricky. And if they get down in a game, especially against maybe UCLA, who's got a lot of offensive firepower, they're going to have to adjust. They're going to have to get tricky. They're going to, all right, we need to score quickly. How do we do that? You can't just sit there, hand it off to Booker 25 times, have Travis dink and dunk, and use up a seven-minute drive, because Utah's going to be in a position where they're going to need to score quickly. They're going to need to get down the field quickly at times. And not deviating from that game plan, I think, is something that's hindering this offense, because I see the talent. I see the players that are there. You've got Booker, who's one of the best backs in the country. Travis, when he's not throwing it right at linebackers, can make pretty much any throw on the field. He throws a very good deep ball, one of the better deep balls of anybody in the entire country. And I think that's an underrated skill for him that not a lot of people recognize. So I wish Utah would play to their players' strengths more at times during the game when making their adjustments and try to find the holes in the defense, as opposed to saying, here's what we're going to do, and we're just going to do it for the next 60 minutes, and they're going to have to stop us. Because at some point, somebody's going to stop them. USC stopped them. Oregon State made adjustments, and Oregon State stopped them. When they run up against Washington this week and then UCLA in a couple weeks, they can't coach like that. They need to be more flexible in their in-game adjustments, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but to me it seems like, especially these last 2 weeks, that maybe the offensive play calling, maybe it's Roderick, maybe it's Whittingham overstepping, but it just seems like they're overreacting. So they got down against USC, and they went away from Booker and became this very pass-dominated. I understand they were down, but Booker running the ball still allows you to score, still sets a play-action pass. Then, you know, Travis had those turnovers, and so what happened this last week with Oregon State, all of a sudden they're saying they didn't pass it enough, and are they overreacting to the turnovers again with that happened to be USC? Do you see where I'm coming from, or what do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think Kyle Whittingham, when he sees turnovers, goes into somewhat of a shell and tries to simplify things, especially from Travis's perspective. When those turnovers are interceptions, he's like, all right, Let's get away from doing that. And you kind of wish they would have made that adjustment mid-game against USC, because by the time he threw the second interception, it's like, all right. And I know the kid made a great play on the third interception. Then he had the fourth, which was kind of a throw-in interception. Didn't really matter. But, I mean, Utah picks up almost as many yards per play, giving the ball to Devontae Booker, whether that's out of the backfield, throwing it to him, or running, as they do when they complete a power on their attempts for throwing the ball. So if they're trying to get down the field and they need to do it quickly, I mean, that means they kind of panic in the USC game, because not until maybe late in the third or early in the fourth that they really need to start slinging that thing. And they went away from Booker pretty much right away at halftime. He had a few carries to start the second half, but he didn't have much in that second half. And they still could have rode him, maybe worn out that USC defense. So I think it was definitely an overreaction. And then and it carried over to the next week. I know Oregon State's run defense wasn't very good, but their pass defense, Utah was having success against them, and they weren't having a ton of success on the ground. I think they only picked up about 4 yards a carry. So Utah not deviating from their game plan week to week is maybe an overreaction to the previous week. And what I'd like to see them do is take each opponent individually and say, all right, fresh slate, here's what we're doing. We're going into this, and we're going to try to be we're going to pass it 50% of the time. We're going to run it 50% of the time. We're going to mix it up. They're not going to know when we're running on first down, when we're passing on first down. Let's be very, very unpredictable because since the USC game, I mean, since about halftime of the USC game, Utah has been very, very predictable on their play calling. So that's six quarters of predictable play calling. And now when you're going up against arguably the best defense in the Pac-12 in Washington, you can't have that. You cannot be predictable against Washington, or they will hold Utah under 15 points. And I just don't know how Utah wins this game if they don't score at least 15 plus. It's going to be a low-scoring game, but they need to be able to be willing to make those adjustments from their game plan throughout the game. And we've seen the defensive side of the ball do it, so we know the offense has the ability to do it. There are playmakers, enough playmakers to do it. It's just whether or not Kyle is willing to let his coaches make those adjustments, or whether his coaches are willing to make those adjustments.
I mean, this is the other interesting factor in all of this, in that Travis Wilson, for some reason or another, is having this roller coaster type of a season where one game he's on and you'll see fans cheering his praise. I mean, the Utah Man podcast on Scorned by Sports was ready to throw him a parade. I mean, and then you have games like USC where in essence is really the reason for one of the main reasons for the loss. How much of them not willing to make adjustments might be on the fact that they don't trust Travis to be able to make and handle those adjustments throughout the game?
I think it's a combination of them not trusting Travis and them not trusting Travis trusting himself. I think Travis has the confidence to make those plays if they just say, hey, you know what, go out there and sling it, man. Because Travis at heart is a natural gunslinger. He's the kind of guy that wants to go out there and throw it 45, 50 times a game, run it 10 himself. He wants to be the guy with the ball in his hands as much as possible. That's just Travis' nature and who he is. There are quarterbacks that don't want to be like that. They want to manage a game. And Travis is kind of in, I don't want to say hamstrung, because that's not the best way to put it, because he does have his deficiencies. But Wilson is the kind of guy that wants to throw it, and he's willing to make throw that interception if it means, you know what, I get picked off scary, but yeah, maybe later in the game I'm picking up a 45-yard gain. Maybe I throw for 350 yards with two interceptions, but I've also got four touchdowns on top of that, and we're putting up bigger numbers. And it makes it a lot harder for a defense to slow down an offense that really has that gunslinger. Every single defense in the country would much rather play that game manager, the guy that is not going to take the risk, not going to take the chances, and let them keep everything in front of them. And that's kind of the way Travis has been taught for the most part, and the way that Utah wants him to approach it. And Travis, at his core, is a guy that really wants to sling it 40, 45 times a game and throw it 30 to 40 yards down the field more often than he's being able to do. So I don't think they have the total confidence in Travis, but I think that they should show more confidence in Travis than they are right now. And I think, like you said earlier, I think that's a great point, that maybe they're overreacting week to week as to what Travis can and can't do. I think if you just let Travis go out there and be himself, yeah, he's going to get picked off here and there. Yeah, maybe he finishes the season with 10 or 12 interceptions. But you know what? If he's throwing for 3,300 yards and he's got 27 touchdowns as well, that's a pretty good season, as long as those interceptions aren't coming at super inopportune times. So I'd say let Travis be who he is naturally, and he's going to have more success. And we're winding down in Travis's career, and next year it's going to be a new quarterback. But this has kind of been a theme for the last 4 years with Travis Wilson, is, hey, do you let him throw it, or is Utah going to try to wind him in and keep him down? They almost treat him like he's a true freshman quarterback at times. And I really wish they'd just say, you know, this guy is a senior, and this guy is a leader, and this guy can make all the plays. Let's let him go out there and win games for us. Because when they really lean on Travis, most of the time Utah's very, very successful, and they just kind of let him play his game and do what he does and let him be who he is, which is naturally a gunslinger.
Yeah, no, I think there are even examples this season where the team has leaned on him and he's been extremely successful. You know, the games that come to my mind are like ASU and Michigan, for example, two games that, sure, where he played really well because they were the teams were gunning and trying to shut down Booker, or Booker was being an amazing offensive lineman in ASU and taking up all those blitzes, and they relied on Wilson, and he took them to victory in it. But another aspect of this whole thing that is concerning to me is, do we just – I know Scott's there, Batman's making plays, and I obviously Covey's making plays, but is there just not enough playmakers in the wide receiver depth to be able to give Travis enough people to throw the ball to?
I don't think people understand how – I mean, Tim Patrick doesn't have huge career numbers. He's really – I mean, he's only played one season at Utah. But Tim Patrick, and he's not a real – he's a lot like Kenneth Scott, and they hate to be called possession receivers. These guys can do more. But Tim Patrick does a lot of different things on the offensive side of the ball. He's a tremendous blocker, and it really opens up a lot of different aspects. Utah's really, really missing him in the passing game, and they've got a couple, they've got a lot of burners on this team, guys that can absolutely fly at the wide receiver spot. But being able, I mean, there's track speed and there's football speed, and a lot of these guys seem to just have track speed, and they can't really apply it to football. And a guy like DeSean McClellan is a great example of that. I think DeSean has, what, one or two catches this year and has made almost no impact. He has maybe, I don't know, seven or eight catches in his entire career. He can absolutely fly, but it's a matter of getting separation, and there's a lot that goes into to being a receiver. Can you get separation off the corner? Can you get a great jump off the line? Can you run a good route? Can you catch the ball? Can you catch the ball and continue to move down the field? And a lot of these guys can do one or two of those things, but the elite guys, the really good guys, a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster, I mean, he can do all those things, and that's what makes him elite. And Utah doesn't have that kind of player on their roster right now. Britton Covey is the closest thing, but he's also the same size as my 13-year-old. So they need to find a guy that's 6'1", 190 pounds, and can go out there and take a beating and catch nine balls a game and make a couple of guys miss, run past guys, and be a factor in the blocking game as well. You know, just doesn't have that on the roster right now. And I know this year's recruiting class is looking pretty good. Maybe a guy like Melky Stovall is able to come in. Utah had a great visit with him when he came in a couple of weeks ago. And I think the Utes are in a great spot to land him. He'd be the kind of guy that can come in right away next year and take Cubby's spot. But you look around the Pac-12 and you look at the different options that all these other teams have at wide receiver, and Utah's the bottom of the barrel. I mean, the reality of it is they're 11th, maybe 12th, maybe to be somewhere between 10 and 12 in terms of overall wide receiver talent and how much they get out of their wide receivers in the passing game. And part of that's an indictment on the recruiting, but part of that is the system. And these kids see what Utah does. They run the ball. They don't throw it a ton. They're not throwing it down the field a ton. So a wide receiver in the recruiting game, they say, well, you know, their offense maybe isn't the best fit for me and what I want to be able to do. So, but I think if Utah was able to get a guy in like that, and Covey's definitely helping a little bit this year, that they'd be able to develop and get more guys that have that skill set where they can do multiple things as opposed to just one thing. Because at the collegiate level, you've got to be good at a couple of different things. You'll make an impact on the field. So part of it's talent, part of it's scheme. Going back to the biggest thing right now is just pure talent and how good these guys are as natural receivers. And Utah just doesn't have a ton of them.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy because, you know, going through, you know, spring and fall camp and just to start the season, you hear about these guys with blazing speed. You mentioned McFarland, you know, the likes of Kendrick Young and these players that were going to make an impact. And then we've gotten into the season and they've been really non-existent. And it just seems to be that playmaker type speed is what the wide receiver depths are missing. And right now all they have is Covey. I mean, not to take anything away from Scott, but, you know, he's made some great plays too, but Covey seems to be the playmaker, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and Covey's kind of your playmaker right now. And the thing I wonder each week is Corey Butler-Bird, why is he not being used more? I mean, he's getting reps on the defensive side of the ball, but for the most part, Porter and Hatfield are getting the majority of the reps at the corner spot. So it's not like Butler Bird's exhausted out there, can't go out and run a couple of routes, stretch that defense. I mean, he's done it this year. We've seen him with the ball in his hands. The guy's absolutely electric. Why not use him in that way? You got guys like Kyle Foulkes who can absolutely fly. And even if he's not catching the ball, you know what? A guy with 10-1, 100 speed or 10-2, 100 speed, whatever he's got, flying down the field and just stretching that defense. Even if you overthrow him, just overthrow him to stretch that defense out and get him thinking. So most of these guys are good enough. You throw the ball down the field, I mean, 19 times out of 20, if he's open and the ball gets there, a guy like Fulks is going to make that catch. So it's worth the risk to just even give up a play, even if you have to overthrow a guy, just to really set that defense off. Because Utah has the speedsters, but even a play that looks like a failure, an incomplete pass on a deep ball, can definitely be successful in setting up another play, whether it's a running play or a passing play on the next one, or maybe a couple plays down the line. So I just don't think that they're using their speed guys in the way that they want to. And they're going to get to the end of the season. They're going to look at all this film. They're going to look back and say, all right, we should have done this. We should have done this. How do we find a way to implement these speed guys more and make them more successful so our quarterbacks can use them in different ways? Because the guys are on the roster that can absolutely run. But even if they're just decoys, use them in some way. And I kind of wish Utah would do that more. So even dump a play if you need to set up a play later on down the line.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, something that's interesting, especially as of late, has been, you know, Chase Hansen's playing safety, and he was supposedly deemed the quarterback of the future. I'm just curious if you might have any information to tell us whether you think Hansen's going to stay on the defense, will he go back to quarterback, and if he does stay on defense, who's going to be the quarterback of the future for this Utah program then?
So I think what we're going to see is we're going to get the spring ball, and Chase Hansen's going to roll out there, and Troy Williams, the former Washington committed to Utah a couple weeks ago out of a JC, and they're really going to be the guys battling for that spot there. And Williams is just, as a quarterback, just has more touch. They're comparable athletes. Chase might be a little bit better athlete, but Williams is a more natural passer. And Kyle does a great job, and his staff does a great job of finding the best fit for each of these guys. And even if that means taking away something from the quarterback spot, even though it's the most important position on the field, then there was one play on Saturday night that just defined why Chase Hansen should be a defensive player, and it was the sack he had. And it wasn't even necessarily the sack and how hard he hit. The guy was late, made that he watched the play in front of him. He watched the play develop. He stayed home where he was supposed to be. He wanted to see if that line or if that running back was going to release and come out of the backfield. As soon as he saw that he didn't, the running back went off to the other side. Chase came in on a blitz and absolutely blew up the quarterback. So his instincts, especially on the defensive side of the ball, are through the roof. And just watching that play, I mean, I just had a huge grin on my face just saying, oh my gosh, this guy is going to be a very good linebacker one day. Not a safety, too big to be a safety. Put another 10 pounds on him, turn him into a linebacker. And I think that's the future for Chase Hansen. And you know what? Maybe next year they're playing him some reps at quarterback as your backup, but Utah's going to need linebackers next year. They lose all three of their starting linebackers in Jason Whittingham, Gianni Paul, and Jared Norris, and they don't have a ton of depth behind them. So I wouldn't be surprised if Chase Hansen is one of your starting linebackers next year. I think that's his best fit. And with Utah bringing in Troy Williams, and they weren't planning on bringing in another quarterback. I mean, a month and a half ago, they were still monitoring Williams. They weren't going to bring in somebody else. So something had to have gone on behind the scenes where Chase Hansen's like, all right, I'm ready to play some safety. And now Utah's like, okay, we got the guy in the spot that we think he's going to be most successful. Let's go out and get Troy Williams, and that's what they're going to do. Troy Williams, I'd say 90% chance he's your starting quarterback if he's not injured at the start of next season. So, and then Chase Hansen will be one of your starters on the defensive side of the ball. He's that good.
Yeah, I mean, I know this is really early to be talking about this, but, you know, my assumption is the Utes are going to finish out the season extremely strong, and expectations for next year could be through the roof. What are some of the important things this team needs to do on a recruiting front to make sure to fill some of those expectations?
Well, I mean, the quarterback spot, they've got three guys coming in. We'll see if all three of them make it. Kai Nevis is a guy that I'm not 100% convinced sticks with his commitment. I wouldn't be surprised if he flipped somewhere else. But as it stands now, he's solid. They've got Joe Williams is going to be their running back of the future. They've got their running backs they want now. They could get one more big back if they want to sign another big back for this class, but they're pretty solid there. Troy McCormick's coming back. They want playmakers. I mean, playmakers, that's the area they're going. They want wide receivers. They need another safety out there. They could use a linebacker or two. And you always stock up on the offensive line. They're getting plenty of guys on the defensive side of the ball. They'll be fine there. A lot of those guys are coming back as well. And Loa Lotulelei hasn't had the season a lot of people would hoped he would have, so he's probably not going to jump to the draft. early, even though that was kind of the plan before the season. So as it stands now, Utah's doing pretty well with their recruiting. It's just they need more speed. They need more playmakers, wide receiver, cornerback, a little bit of safety, and linebacker in the offensive line are the spots they're really targeting right now. So, and they're going to hit the JC ranks probably pretty hard here late. Wouldn't be surprised if another JC guy, they offered another JC guy or two, and I expect them to probably land maybe 2 to 3 more JC commits. So, the thing about 2016, and it's a big worry for me, and I've had this conversation with multiple people, is you look at Utah's team and they lose a ton. They lose Travis Wilson. I mean, they're going to lose their backup in Kendall Thompson. They're going to lose Devontae Booker. So you're going to lose Kenneth Scott. You're losing Siosi Ayono. You're going to lose Britton Covey to a mission. So you've lost maybe right off the top your five best offensive players right there. That's going to be hard to replicate that kind of offense when Utah already struggles offensively. Defensive side of the ball, yeah, you're going to return pretty much your entire defensive line. Jason Fanaika or Fanaika or whatever you want to call him this week is going to be gone. But the linebackers are all going to be out. Tevin Carter's gone. I expect Dominic Hatfield to make the jump to the NFL. So Utah going into 2016, it's just kind of a scary proposition right now that they're going to have a lot of unknowns. And I think the expectations as they stand now, because I expect Utah to finish the season at worst, the regular season 9-3, at best, obviously 11-1, and have a chance to get in that playoff, if not, or maybe even the Rose Bowl, we'll see. I think people are going to expect Utah to replicate that, but you got to look at 2016 as maybe a step back year, unless Utah gets some guys to really surprise, because the guys that are departing are huge, huge guys. And guys that really contribute. And I know the offensive line's getting a lot of guys back, but they're going to lose their best offensive lineman in Siosi Ayono. So 2016's a little scary for me right now, and it'll be whatever happens in that bowl game. And if Utah – I mean, when they go to the Rose Bowl, they're going to play their starters a lot. But if they get – I mean, if they get dumped to the Alamo Bowl or Holiday Bowl or something like that, don't get me wrong, they want to win. But you're going to see some more reps out of those younger guys, kind of like we saw last year in their bowl game, and trying to develop some of those guys. So you kind of get a look towards the future, and hopefully they've got some guys that are going to return in 2016. They can show off in that bowl game, give everybody a little bit more confidence. But as it stands now, 2016 is kind of a scary proposition for the Utes because of the losses they have and the number of unknowns. And we've had this question before, how's Utah going to replace this guy, replace that guy? And they tend to just plug guys in. A lot of us have never heard of return missionaries, former walk-ons, stuff like that. But I don't think they've ever had the turnover from a top end talent standpoint, guys that contribute like they're going to have next year. So, the Utes really need to do some hard work on the recruiting trail for the rest of 2016 and find guys that can contribute and continue to develop some of the younger guys and then hopefully get guys like Raylon Singleton healthy and maybe Tim Patrick can get healthy and come back and hopefully Ahmad Christian can get a medical red shirt and just to have those experienced guys come back. That would be huge. But right now, 2016, really scares me a lot. It's I just don't know what to think when you've got a brand new quarterback, brand new running back, brand new center, and all your linebackers are gone.
Yeah, that is a scary proposition. Now that you make me think about it a little bit more. I might be up late tonight thinking about it. Finally to come back to this year, you know, I was hoping maybe I could get a prediction from you for the Washington game, and then, you know, what your realistic ultimate prediction is for the rest of the season. I mean, you mentioned 9-3 or 11-1. What do you actually think is going to happen?
To be honest, I mean, this Washington game to me is the toughest game they have remaining. UCLA is the most talented team they've got on the schedule, but when it comes to UCLA, it depends on which team you're going to get from week to week. They're probably, from a national perspective, the most Jekyll and Hyde inconsistent team. We saw them just absolutely wipe the floor with California 1 week, and the next week they come back and probably should have lost. They were outplayed by Colorado last week. So UCLA at their best probably beats Utah at their best. That's just the long and short of it. But UCLA rarely plays up to their best, and Utah tends to always play to their expectations. So I look at this Washington game as the one that really scares me the most from Utah perspective. The two teams are so similar. You look, statistically, the only thing that kind of stands out a little bit is Utah's got a much better plus minus margin in forcing turnovers. But what scares me for Utah is Washington just doesn't give up touchdowns. You get in that red zone, and I think they're the conversion percentage is like 38% for touchdowns for opponents against Washington in that red zone. So if Utah's forced to settle for field goals the whole game. And it's not that Washington's going to score a bunch of points, but it could come down to who has the better defense in the red zone. The field position battle, Utah's going to have an edge there because of what Tom Hackett can do. So Seattle's a hard place to play, and it'll be cold, but Utah's used to that. And I think Utah still is just the better team. Washington's more talented, don't get me wrong. They're definitely a more talented team, but their talent is so young, freshmen, sophomores, guys like that that are contributing. Utah's talent, the guys that are playing, much more experienced. They've been through the rigors. They've lost. They've won. They know what it takes to win on the road. So I give Utah the slight edge there, and I think the Utes pull out a really, really close victory. If anyone gets the 20 points first, that team's going to win. In terms of the rest of the season, I mean, UCLA is the game that you just don't know because if the Super Bruins show up, Utah's probably going to lose. But if the who knows what Bruins show up, I mean, Utah can wipe the floor with them and beat them by 30. So those are the two games that are real big question marks. Utah should be able to get through Arizona. They've got no defense whatsoever. I know their offense put up a ton of points on Utah last year. That game could turn into somewhat of a shootout, but there's no reason not to go with the Utes. And then Colorado's Colorado. So, excuse me. So, to be honest, I like Utah to win out. I think they win their last four. I think if they're going to lose one, Washington's the one this weekend. I've got no confidence in UCLA being the good UCLA when they're on the road, especially in a place like Salt Lake where they've struggled. And I think Utah wins out. It goes 11-1, battles Stanford in that Pac-12 title game, and Utah's owned Stanford the last couple of years. So Stanford looks great, though. They've got a whole different dynamic with that running back and Christian McCaffrey. I don't know how Utah stops him. So if I had to play it out in my head the rest of the year, Utah finishes 11-1, takes on Stanford. Stanford beats them in the Pac-12 title game. They go to the playoff. Utah settles for their first ever Rose Bowl. So I think a nice little consolation prize for the Utes and the Utes fans.
Yeah, let's settle for Rose Bowl. I'll settle for Rose Bowl any day.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I call this the podcast Torn by Sports Lunch Break. Brian, I'm wondering what your favorite spot is to hit up for lunch.
My favorite spot to hit up for lunch? Oh, geez. I'm actually sitting outside of it right now. I'm going to go in just a minute. It's called Anaya's Market. It's in Park City. I live in Park City. So it's a little Mexican market here, and they have a tiny little cafe in the back. And I don't think they speak a word of English back there, which tells me it's always delicious. So I love Mexican food. I'm going to go inside and get a burrito that's about 8 pounds here in a minute. And that is absolutely my favorite place in all of Utah to get some lunch or get some food. So I'm heading in there right now to get some delicious grub at Anaya's Market.
And you'll be taking a nap afterwards. Is that what I understood?
I will be heading home and taking a nap. There's nothing like a 2 p.m. nap on a Thursday. So gotta get all prepped for tonight's Running Utes game. So
yeah, Running Utes starting today. All right,
sure.
Well, Brian, thanks for coming on. Look forward to talking to you in the future. Some football and definitely some basketball as basketball gets going. And go Utes.
All right, thanks so much.
This has been a Torn by Sports production.